Greetings. Happy Wednesday. Forgot what day of the week it was there for a minute. I am Steve Dace. He is Aaron McIntyre. No Todd Erzin today. He has the day off. That's right. He has the day off because apparently he thought he needed to go watch his daughter in the state soccer tournament or something. And I am nothing if not a benevolent and yet vicious taskmaster. So I granted it to him. I mean, I don't know. I am getting soft as I approach 50. I gave you guys an extra holiday day off for the weekend. I'm letting Todd take days off in the middle of the week for soccer, of all things. I am absolutely getting soft. Nevertheless, given how hard and stern I am on the staff here, I just thought it was good every now and then to mix things up and show them a little bit of kindness. So for Buy, Sell, or Hold later in the show, we will have a special guest. Our good friend Jill Savage, Blaze TV contributor, has been bestowed the honor. I don't think we've ever had let anybody do Buy, Sell, or Hold with
us before.
Actually,
I think Jill may have done it with us once before.
Did she? Okay.
Yeah, but I think she was with
the crew.
Todd. Yeah,
yeah, not
crew.
As a replacement.
Yeah.
Yeah, so she's clearly earned an extra level of trust here on the show, and so she'll be joining us for Buy, Sell, or Hold. Daniel Horowitz will join us for some woe and lamentation later on in the program as well. I also want to mention, speaking of going soft, but man, I got to tell you, I had a chance to try our new client at Miracle Brand Sheets. I had a chance to try them on my own bed, and dude, these are absolutely legit, particularly if you're cold-blooded, like most wives are, including mine, warm-blooded, like most husbands are, including me, all right? Self-cooling properties, self-heating properties for better quality sleep, uses silver-infused fabrics originally inspired by NASA. So if you wake up too hot, too cold, recommend checking out Miracle Made's bed sheets using that temperature-regulating bedding so that you can sleep at the perfect temperature all night long. They're self-cleaning as well. They are infused with a silver that prevents about 99.7% of the bacteria out there. And if you recently had a potentially life-threatening bacterial infection, as I did, that's a big talking point. All right. Luxurious comfort and quality. Miracle sheets are luxuriously comfortable. I've enjoyed them a lot the last couple of nights, and the pillowcase as well. So if you want to give them a try, trymiracle.com/dace is where you want to go. Trymiracle.com/dace. And man, they've got a great offer for you if you want to try them today. Save over 40%. And if you use the promo code DACE at checkout, you'll get an additional 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. You can't beat it. 40% when you go to trymiracle.com/dace. If you use the promo code DACE at checkout, you get an additional 3 free towels and another 20% off as well at trymiracle.com. Use the promo code DACE. And with that, let us get to Aaron's rundown of what happened while we were away.
What happened while we were away, brought to you by Kicking Off in Iowa. Florida Governor and GOP presidential hopeful Ron DeSantis was in Iowa last night for his first campaign kickoff event in the First in the Nation caucus state. DeSantis covered an immense amount of ground in his hour and a half or so event, but still had time for a subtle jab at Donald Trump.
Now, it is great to be back. Now, a few weeks ago, we were in state. We were not actually scheduled to come to the Des Moines area, but before we decamped back to Florida, the weather was so nice that we felt we just had to come back and pay everyone a little bit of a visit.
DeSantis also dropped this.
At the end of the day, leadership is not about entertainment. It's not about building a brand. It's not about virtue signaling. It is about results. And in Florida, we didn't lead with merely words. We followed up our words with deeds. And we have produced a record of accomplishment that we would put up against anybody in this country.
Casey DeSantis also spoke, and it's clear she's a crowd favorite.
I get frustrated, too, with all of these people in elective office who say they're going to go do something. Then they go up to Washington. They go rogue. They don't hold true to what they told the people that they would do. And it's frustrating. But I can tell you, Ron DeSantis always stands up for what's right. He never backs down. He says what he's going to do, and he gets it done.
On the other hand, Trump took to Truth Social last night to lambast a former staffer of his, former White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany, a figure nearly universally admired, as Trump would soon find out. Quote, Kayleigh Milquetoast McEnany just gave out the wrong poll numbers on Fox News. I am 34 points up on DeSanctimonious, not 25 up. While 25 is great, it's not 34. She knew the number was corrected upwards by the group that did the poll. The rhinos and globalists can have her. Fox News should only use real stars. And now, a struggle session update. Toronto Blue Jays player Anthony Bass allowed himself to participate in a struggle session yesterday after sharing a post on Instagram encouraging the boycott of Target.
I recognized yesterday I made a post that was hurtful to the Pride community, which includes friends of mine and close family members of mine, and I am truly sorry for that. I just spoke with my teammates and shared with them my actions yesterday. I apologize with them. And as of right now, I'm using the Blue Jays resources to better educate myself, to make better decisions moving forward. The ballpark is for everybody. We include all fans at the ballpark, and we want to welcome everybody. That's all I have to say.
So what was the offensive post that Bass shared that caused such a self-flagellating response? I mean, it's got to be, like, really bad, right? Well, I read about five stories about this episode, and not one of them mentioned what was said in the content of the supposedly offensive post he shared on Instagram. And you'll soon understand why in just a little bit. I finally did track down the post he shared on Instagram, and it comes from this account called Dude with Good News.
Here's the reason biblically why I believe Christians ought to be boycotting Target and Bud Light and any other corporation that's pushing the things they're pushing. I think a lot of people make this into a political issue, or they say, oh, what's the big deal? If, you know, is it really going to make that big of a difference if I'm shopping there or not shopping there? Here's what the Bible says. It tells us what to do as Christians in Ephesians chapter 5. It says this, take no part in the unfruitful works of darkness, but instead expose them. For it is shameful to even talk of the things that they do in secret. So what does that mean to take no part? Well, what's Target do? It's a business. They make money. They sell things. And to take part in that is to take part in that God of Mammon that they're serving, and to take part in the darkness that they're purveying and getting out to the world and shoving into children's faces. And to take part in that is to give them your money. And I believe the Bible gives us radical precedent to say no. We are running from that, and to instead expose those things, to shout it to all the people that have ears to hear that this is evil, this is demonic, we won't stand for it, we're not going to go to the stores anymore, and we're not going to give them our money. We're going to let our voice be heard so that people can see the light. And so that people can be pulled out of the darkness.
So yes, Anthony Bass is in a struggle session over merely reposting that video. And finally this, boy howdy, remember like 15 Scaramouches ago when Ron DeSantis' campaign announcement on Twitter was a failure to launch and a metaphor for his candidacy? Well, that could still turn out to be true, but if you're on Twitter and following along in the aftermath of his announcement, following along with the back and forth between Trump and DeSantis surrogates, that was an eternity ago. Aside from the absolute bat crap stupid stuff from Team Trump, like the charge that when Casey DeSantis isn't faking cancer, she's wearing her gloves incorrectly, the now tired charges that Ron is a bushy, and numerous attempts at smears against DeSantis campaign spokeswoman Christina Pusha and others, one attempt to weaken DeSantis stood out because of its absolute bat crap stupidity. Rahim Kassam is a British atheist whose parents emigrated to the UK from Tasmania, so his entire being screams America first. He's previously worked for Breitbart, Human Events, and Nigel Farage. He's currently the editor-in-chief of the National Pulse and a huge fan of Donald Trump. Over the weekend, Kassam published so-called leaked audio of Ron DeSantis' donor meeting in Miami. Kassam accompanied the audio with the following report. Leaked DeSantis camp audio moved to the middle after primary. Clinton's approach to abortion. Leaked audio has emerged from the DeSantis donor strategy meeting in Miami on Thursday. In the clip you hear below, DeSantis strategists tell high-dollar donors making calls for the campaign that DeSantis' position is keeping abortion decisions at a state level following Trump. Trump's position that the governor will shift to the middle during the general election. The campaign's position on abortion can be described as safe, legal, and rare in Florida. Remember that phrase? A stunning deployment of President Bill Clinton's infamous pro-abortion catchphrase. During the session, the hosts, including DeSantis pollster Ryan Tyson, amongst others, can be heard lauding this as a major step forward for the Republican Party in moving to the middle on abortion. Remember that phrase as well. There are a number of times throughout the leaked audio that DeSantis' strategists can be heard telling wealthy donors, you have to win a primary before you win a general, which is political campaign speak for we'll move to the middle after we win the nomination. Remember that phrase as well. In response, DeSantis supporters originally denied the existence of the audio, then claimed it never provided the quotes that can be heard in full below. Eventually, their claim came to rest on a straw man argument that Ryan Tyson didn't make the comments, but that an unnamed donor in the room did. Mr. Tyson was not directly quoted as the source of all the comments in the audio in the first instance. So that's the report from Raheem Kassam. Here's the problem, though. The quotes attributed to the DeSantis campaign staffers, with a wink and a nod, are actually from a donor who attempted to lecture the campaign on how to message on abortion. Here's what that sounded like.
Can I add some talking points to that? Because I think we're talking about micro-targeting in our phone calls, and we do have pro-choice Republicans we're talking about in the donor class. Abortion is safe, legal, and rare in Florida. It is legal in Florida. It has not been banned. Most abortions occur with chemical, with a plan B at this point, right? So when you're talking to a pro-choice donor, I don't think you just sort of go by and say, look, abortion is legal in Florida, okay? It is legal in Florida in most of the situations when people have a situation with an unwanted or an unprotected sex situation, they're going to use the chemical abortifacient, right? So you can come right at them and say it is legal in Florida. Now it is limited. It's limited. You have to be responsible about it. But I don't think when you're talking to a pro-choice voter, you just sort of skip over it. We got to point out that this is a major step forward for the Republican Party in terms of moving to the middle on the abortion issue.
And here's how the campaign responded.
We don't have the luxury in this operation, and I wouldn't call it a luxury in today's political climate. We don't tell our candidate what his principles should be. That's not how it works. Our candidate, our governor, he is who he is. And I'm merely trying to tell you all from the data's perspective, that his principles really sell and will sell in this country. So I respect and understand that point. I totally understand how difficult that is when you're talking to a pro-choice donor. I get that. Carson, Mike's over here.
I had one line on that.
One of the things I've said for a long time is if we want a man in the White House capable of standing up to Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin, we want him to be able to stand up to donor pressure on issues that are difficult. And I have actually found in discussions that people appreciate that. So that's just one other thought.
So the entire implication that the DeSantis campaign is planning on moving to the middle on abortion after winning the GOP primary and embracing Bill Clinton's stance on abortion is a complete and total fabrication. Instead, as you heard, the campaign actually reiterated DeSantis's stance on life and even went further to say that DeSantis wouldn't be cowed into moving his position from donor pressure. So the campaign never stated that their position is, quote, safe, legal, and rare in Florida. The campaign never lauded this as a major step forward for the Republican Party in moving to the middle on abortion. And the charge that you have to win a primary before you win a general is campaign speak for moving to the middle? Well, that's totally and completely subjective. Total fabrication from British citizen Raheem Kassam, who has a particularly keen interest in American politics. And that's what happened while we were away.
All right. There's three big ticket items there. One of them we're going to set aside and discuss in the overtime today. Both Aaron and I were at DeSantis's formal Iowa kickoff event last night. And we will share some candid thoughts about that coming up in the overtime today. For Blaze TV subscribers, if you are a subscriber, good news, you'll be able to watch it later today at blazetv.com/Dace, D-E-A-C-E. If you are not yet a Blaze TV subscriber, however, and would like to become one, that is also where you can go, blazetv.com/Dace for just $10 a month. blazetv.com/Dace. Don't miss any of the exclusive content like Glenn's outstanding Wednesday night specials here on Blaze TV, and today, of course, is Wednesday. BlazeTV.com/days. All right, let's discuss two of the other big ticket items in Aaron's montage. The scripture verse that Anthony Bass was originally tweeting an Instagram video about comes from Ephesians chapter 5. And if you guys are a longtime listener of this show, you know that I end it with John 3:17. Over the years, I've ended it with different Bible verses. The very first Bible verse I ever ended it with, for example, was Isaiah 61. And why? Because that is what Christ quotes in his very first message coming out of the wilderness, out of the 40 days of testing, after facing the devil himself. And he goes to his hometown synagogue. He is handed the scroll to read, and it is from the prophet Isaiah. And he reads Isaiah 61, previewing, portending the messianic ministry, and he applies it to himself. In the last, what, Aaron, 6-7 years, John 3:17 has been the Bible verse that we've ended the show with.
The entire time that I've worked for you.
Yeah. So yes, that would be about 7 years then, yeah. In between those two verses, for several years, Ephesians 5:11 was how we ended the show. Have no fellowship with the darkness, but instead expose it. That's what that individual on that Instagram video, he is exegeting that portion of scripture and applying it to what is going on with corporations like Target. And Anthony Bass, who claims to be a Christian, I want to speak to him and to others within the sound of my voice now as an apostle and not as an assassin. Don't do this. Anthony Bass's very eternal soul is at risk right this moment. Christ said, if you deny me among men, then I will deny you before my heavenly Father. When Jesus talks about you did all these great deeds, but then at the end I say, I depart from me, I don't know you, into the den of iniquity with you. What's he talking about? People like Anthony Bass can give all the money to all the food pantries they want, and that's great, and you should do that. But when it comes time to declare whose you are, and therefore whom you are, you'll notice when Jesus is arrested, he is silent throughout every exchange until and unless he is questioned, who are you? Before Caiaphas, he is silent. And then finally, Caiaphas asks him, are you the Messiah? And now Jesus boldly speaks up, quoting from the prophet Daniel, and you will see the Son of Man descending from the clouds of heaven. And that's why Caiaphas tore his garments. He understood what Jesus was claiming, that he was Messiah. For this reason, Christ tells Pontius Pilate, I came into the world to testify to the truth. You can join a Rotary Club, United Way, lots of secular organizations, and do a lot of good work and great deeds for your fellow man. And I wouldn't discourage anyone in the sound of my voice from doing any of those things. Just know, though, that's not the heart of your testimony. The heart of your testimony is when Christ looks at Peter, the lead apostle, and says, who do the people say that I am? Peter says, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. That is the heart of your testimony. There are no games. There are no escape hatches. There is no clever way to avoid. You will declare one way or another. Anthony Bass has declared. Now, this doesn't have to be his final declaration, but I would imagine 24 hours ago, Anthony Bass thought that he was walking with the Lord. I can promise you on the authority of the Lord's word that right now he is not, and has turned his back on it. And there are people in this audience right now, and in every audience, in the times in which we live in this country, that I think also are going to be faced with many moments. Who knows? Maybe one of them will be me. And we read the stories in the Old Testament and we say, well, they had this pillar of cloud and this pillar of smoke, burning bushes and parted seas. And if I had been alive during those times, I would have never, ever turned from my Lord. Peter ate with the Lord, rested with the Lord, worshiped with the Lord, heard directly from the Lord for 3 years. And he denied him 3 times at the first real sight of pushback. Therefore, by the grace of God, go each and every one of us. If you are unsure that you are up for this test, we will all find out. We are playing for existential stakes here in this place called America. And there will be no middle ground. It will be Kaiser curious or Christos curious. Those are your only two options in the end. And everyone will choose which of those options. And it won't be what they self-claim or self-profess, but when the button gets pushed and the boot is put to the throat and the proverbial sword is put to their head, that they will truly declare. Each and every one of us will make that declaration. Pray for Mr. Bass. Pray for his soul. Pray for ourselves that when our time of testing will come, that we will be found worthy of the calling that we have received. That we will count it all joy to suffer for the name. Because this thing called America isn't going to come down to a superior plan or a superior ideology, but to the superior courage of conviction. Whomsoever most truly believes in its in their cause and is most willing to live it out will win. Period. Period. Which brings us to Raheem Kassam, a name I have heard loosely a few times. I have no personal experience with that I can recall. I don't know, maybe in a DM somewhere, but he came at me last week when I was asked to ask a question for Governor DeSantis on his Twitter announcement. I could ask anything I wanted. Referring to me as a local Iowa radio host. I've not been a local Iowa radio host for 12 years. All right. Now, he did accuse me of sounding panicky. That part I got to own. Okay. I mean, my Twitter app kept locking up and I couldn't get the mute button to click off. And so I thought I was going to end up bogging down the entire proceeding. So I think I was a little panicky when they finally got me on the air. But the rest of what he claimed about me simply just is not even true. None of it is. But I am willing to offer Mr. Kassam and his cohorts, you know, I don't do as much work in Iowa as I used to do, you know, now that we're on a bigger platform. But, you know, I have a wee bit of influence around here still. I mean, I'm open to offering them another demonstration of that influence if they prefer. I've demonstrated it once for them already. But the reality here is, I think that this begs a question, what Aaron just broke down and deconstructed. I found out about this audio because a buddy of mine who worked in the Trump White House and has been seriously considering moving to DeSantis texted me on Friday. I'm trying to finish Jedi Survivor with my son Noah on a Friday night. And he texts me this story. And I'm like, wow, I can't believe that the Trump people have this and they wasted it on a Friday news dump in a holiday weekend. I'd be saving that puppy till next week. That's a neutron bomb. Because like most people, all I did was just read the headline. And I skimmed through the article because I'm trying to have some time with my kid. Later on, we get done playing. He goes to bed and I jump back on Twitter and I am stunned that this is not like a hashtag leading everywhere in political Twitter. Like, why isn't this a major story? Why isn't anybody sharing this? Well, then I go and check the audio and find out why. Because it's a complete and total bleep and lie. The whole thing is. I don't know if Raheem Kassam is a liar. I do know, though, that he lied in that piece. I do know that. That's just not what went on there. The actual audio contradicts it. And that's why a guy that's got about 500,000 Twitter followers tried planting a story and that would be very favorable to a large faction of political Twitter, Trump's network of influencers. And it went absolutely nowhere because people vetted the story and realized it's just substantively untrue. It's just not true. And that's why they tried to drop it on a Friday news dump, because they were desperate to change the narrative. So desperate they did this. It's just sloppy. It's dishonest. I know that his boss, Steve Bannon, knows a thing or two about truth, because if there's anybody around here that has told more truth with a major platform in this country that has told more truth about this poisonous jab the last few years than me, it's probably him. He's one of the few people I've actually learned something new from. And I'm very thankful for that. The work Steve Bannon has done has saved people's lives. It saved people's fertility systems, reproductive systems. And he is owed a debt of gratitude for that. And he certainly gets that from me. But I think he needs to do a better job of babysitting his kennel, because that's sloppy and it's really dishonest. And it is one thing for Rahab to lie for the Israelites. She ends up in the lineage of the aforementioned Messiah. But it's another thing for Rahab to now lie to and about the Israelites. And so here is my question. On some level, do we have a responsibility as a movement / industry? Like you saw this last night. Clearly, Kayleigh McEnany has a lot of friends. And they all came to her defense last night, including people who love Donald Trump, and said, nope, not happening. That's good. But what about where truth is concerned? And to me, I think you have to give some ground for campaign embellishment. I mean, what Trump is saying about Florida being third in deaths is factually out of context, if not inaccurate. But those are campaigns, and that's frankly the DeSantis' campaign's responsibility to fix. This, though, is an attempt to lie and gaslight directly to our people about a matter of grave importance: innocent human life. Is there any responsibility that we have as an industry or a movement, regardless of what side you're on here, or any side for that matter, to say that is just dishonest? Don't lie to our people. Don't lie to our own people like that. What possible benefit is there? This is Donald Trump's last lap around the track. Win or lose, he's 80. Best case scenario, he is inaugurated in January 2025. This is his last campaign. Worst case scenario, it's his last campaign. We're all going to be here a lot longer than him. What is the benefit of us gaslighting and lying to each other to this magnitude? Because I fail to see any. There have to be some rules of engagement, shouldn't there, Aaron? You provide some area for campaign embellishments and spin, and everybody does it, and everybody's good at do it. And I've been on a campaign, so I get it, you know? But there ought to be some things that are just, no, we're defecating in our own yard. We're peeing in our own water table. This kind of stuff is toxic. And frankly, it undermines Mr. Bannon's incredible work on the jab. I mean, if they're just going to go out there and push stuff that just with a cursory examination of the audio is easily discredited, then it takes a lot of the really, really important work that they do over there when they're not shilling for Trump, and it makes cast aspersions on that. Well, how do I know that's true then? Someone will say. There needs to be some form of honor code here. We don't lie about each other. I mean, if we're really in some form of a cold civil war, would you lie about your fellow troops like this? I want to discuss this further, Aaron, and I want to get your take on it when we come back.
Hi, it's Jason Whitlock. Have you secured your spot for Roll Call 2.0, my annual men's summit in Nashville, Tennessee? Are you looking for an opportunity to fellowship with other believers, to come together across the identity lines the left have drawn to divide us? Join me, country music star John Rich, and Blaze founder Glenn Beck in Nashville on Saturday, June 1st for Roll Call 2.0. We're going to listen to great music, eat fantastic barbecue, and hear inspiring speeches from myself, Glenn Beck, North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, Pastor E.W. Jackson, and many more. Let's quit letting the satanic left sift us like wheat. Let's come together as men and talk about the sacrifices we must make to restore the unity and shared values that made our country the envy of the world. Visit fearlessarmyrollcall.com to secure your spot.
All right, back here on the Steve Dace Show, you know, you've been hearing me talk about the outstanding wines at Bonner Private Wines. And even though Todd's not here to talk about one of his favorite partners, we will discuss them anyway. These outstanding wines from a private wine partnership. Families that have been doing this with vineyards deep in the Andes Mountains, going back now for a couple of centuries or going on a couple of centuries. 9,000 feet of altitude are these Malbec grapes grown, and that leads to an outstanding assortment of red wine flavors when you try Bonner Private Wines. And they'll even throw in a bonus bottle of small batch limited production wine from their exclusive wine cellar as well as part of their traditional deal where you get the three bottles, but now four for half off and free shipping, which is a big deal when we're talking about imported foreign wine. So free shipping, half off the three bottle, and then the fourth bottle is thrown in there as well. The bonus bottle, the small batch limited production exclusive wine cellar bottle. Get this outstanding deal when you go to BonnerPrivateWines.com/Steve, B-O-N-N-E-R, BonnerPrivateWines.com/Steve. So to pick this up, Aaron, where we left off, I think we have to ask ourselves, and hey, I'll be fair here. Mike Cernovich is a guy that was a very prominent Trumpista in 2016. He has flipped over to support DeSantis, and he was calling out one of DeSantis's social influencers for claiming that Bannon never built the wall and committed a form of fraud. And he's like, I went to the place where Bannon was building the wall. That's not true. Okay. So I think there should be some honor code. Completely gaslighting our own people, completely lying to our own people. Again, provide some room for campaign spin, campaign interpretations. Otherwise, we're going to drive ourselves insane and hate each other by the time it's over. But and I get that a lot of my colleagues just ignored Raheem Kassam's report once they saw it was bunk, didn't pick up on it, and didn't give voice to it. I appreciate that. But do we have a further responsibility to say, that ain't happening? We don't do that here. I'll give you an example. My buddy Dan Bongino, big Trump guy, already endorsed Trump. Saw that they were criticizing DeSantis staffer Christina Pushaw for being ugly and taking too much Botox. That was literally a thing on Twitter over the weekend. For those of you that, you know, unlike us, have lives and stay away from that stuff. And Dan came right out and said, listen, Christina Pushaw is a beautiful person in and out. That's an example of what I'm talking about. Are there places where we just should step in and say, nope, no. There has to be some honor code here. Because that's the kind of stuff. If you really want to know, there were two primary reasons I fought Trump all the way to the convention in 2016. Number one was issues. For me, it's always about issues. He had no record on our issues at all. None. Number two, just the lack of character and the dishonesty. Literally accused Cruz of tapping his own campaign spokeswoman, Katrina Pearson, in the middle of the campaign. That's the kind of stuff that creates hard feelings. A real fight where two guys are at the center of the ring and they give it their all and they exchange punches and one guy knocks the other one out doesn't create bitter feelings. Being backstabbed does. Being gaslit does. do we have some responsibility to say when stuff like what Raheem Kassam tried to pull over the weekend comes out? No. More than just we're not giving any more breath to it, Aaron, do we have a responsibility to directly confront it and say that that can't happen? We're not doing that to our own people. We're not doing that.
Well, yes. The obvious answer is yes. However, from what I've seen and what I saw over the weekend is one, I think one of the reasons why this particular story didn't get even more legs, along with the other attacks, is that the Trump people, the Trump camp, is just continually flooding the zone with, quite frankly, just a lot of BS. And so not one story, unlike back in 2015 and 2016, where Trump just glommed onto immigration, they're not letting just one story. They're constantly playing defense and you know, trying to sling mud against the wall and seeing what sticks. And right now, because they're slinging too much mud, nothing is sticking right now. I would also say this. I think there is somewhat of a difference between the Trump campaign and his online army. Now, his online army is very, very active and constantly, constantly out there just trying again to see what sticks. Now, Trump's actual campaign, for instance, they don't really have much, at least they haven't really shown much that they have against DeSantis that will actually stick. This morning, they were out there accusing DeSantis while he was in the House of Representatives of voting to confirm FBI Director Chris Wray, who was a Trump nominee. The House of Representatives does not vote to confirm executive appointments. If that's what they've got, I'm not really sure where they're going. Okay?
Not to mention, you're supposedly beating the guy by 40 points, right? So why even do this at all, then, if that's the case?
Preoccupied. Yeah. Why are you preoccupied with this as well? Raheem Kassam, the crux, really, of his entire piece is the fact that this is all audio and nothing on video. Now, there are distinctive voices. The clip that I played from the what appears to be a donor, or sounds like a donor, came during the donor Q&A session. But he's relying on the fact that you can't see this, and so he's attributing some of these quotes, or at least with a wink and a nod, he's attributing some of these quotes to the actual DeSantis campaign. And it was pretty obvious. The clip that I played first and the clip that I played second were very sequentially ordered. It was just a few seconds later that the DeSantis campaign, Ryan Tyson, the pollster, made that rebuttal, just saying, our candidate is who he is. And it's not our job to tell him what his principles are, basically. Strong response. Now, I will say Ryan Tyson, the pollster,
I don't know Ryan Tyson, never met him. Yeah. And I don't know him. Couldn't pick him out of a police lineup.
First time I've ever heard of him, actually. I listened to the whole audio and it seemed like he's pretty well versed at what his craft. He actually opened up the kind of the commentary on the issue of life with these comments. Responding, I believe, to a question from a donor.
So, Ronnie's asking about the abortion issue. For those of you who've been through Tallahassee, you know that I can talk about this for a while if you give me some time. The first things first is last night, I feel like you heard the governor on Trey Gowdy's show articulate the best position for a Republican in this country today on abortion, defending his position. If you did not hear that, you need to go back and you need to listen to him tonight. His position is, while he understands that there are ways that the federal government can be helpful to preserve life, the best way that you will preserve life is at the state level. He worries that if the federal government starts getting involved in it with abortion, that it's actually going to open up the door for Democrats to roll back pro-life reforms in many of the states across this country. So I felt he did a really good job articulating that point last night. If your question, though, if I understand it, in the primary, we're right where we need to be on that issue. If your concern is in the general election, what I would argue to you is this, and I'm sure I'll have no shortage of folks that disagree with me on this tape, but please trust me when I tell you this, it comes from empirical data and from qualitative feedback. If you are a voter in 2024, as we likely are in a historic recession, and you are choosing between a young candidate, Ron DeSantis, versus an octogenarian, and if you are voting on the issue of abortion as one of the top two issues for determining your vote for president, I would offer to you that our data suggests that that person has a very high correlation with typical Democrat voting behavior. That's my answer to your question. The governor is going to, he's said what his position is on abortion. I would also say to you that Democrats are going to message on abortion regardless of what your position is. That's what they're going to say. And what we found in the general elections in 2022 is it's a kill shot if you're a piss poor candidate and you're getting hit on abortion issues. But what the 22 general election also proved is that if you're a good candidate, you can survive that. Look no further than Governor Kemp in Georgia. Signs a heartbeat bill right before the primary. He waxes Stacey Abrams by 7-8 points, or even more. I think it was closer to 10. Same thing happened up in Ohio. DeWine dramatically overperformed. The governor signed the bill that he did in Florida, took $30 million of persuasion ads in this state, and he smoked Charlie Crist by 19 points. So that's my argument to you. I feel like we got to go where the runner's going, not where he is. I feel like in the general election, the issues that people are moving on, that actually are moving on, I think we're on message with.
So essentially, that message there is, and I don't agree necessarily that Mike DeWine is a good quality candidate, but he is pro-life and he signed pro-life legislation in Ohio. That's just a fact. Mm-hmm. I believe that's basically an articulation of something that we've articulated several times on this show, is that if you are voting as a closed fist issue that you want to kill babies, you're going to vote for Democrats
no matter what. No matter what
you
position the Republican has.
Votes. So what good does it do you? And I think that's the point that he's making. Mm-hmm. What good does it do you to moderate on this issue whatsoever? None. It doesn't. It just depresses your own base. And that's basically the and if you're a bad quality candidate, you're going to get killed on this issue. If you're a good quality candidate, you're going to win and probably win bigly on the issue.
So what's the line? Where do, like, I thought this crossed a line. That's why we're talking about it. You thought it crossed a line, too. That's why you put it in the montage. So we both agree this crossed a line. Now, why did we agree that this crossed a line? To me, it crossed a line because it's just wholly and totally inaccurate in terms of the depiction of what is actually within the audio itself. It's gaslighting incarnate, and not over a trivial issue, by the way, but one that has been the fundamental culture war issue for my entire life, and I'll be 50 years old this year, not to mention yours. I mean, you're because I'm what, 20 years older than you. All right. So that is, to me, why this crossed a line beyond just normal campaign rhetoric, spin, memes, you know, pissing contest and stuff that most people could care less about. Why did it cross a line for you?
Listen, Democrat primaries are about one thing. I'm to the left of you, and I'm to the left of you, and here's how I'm going to get to the left of you, and here's how I'm going to get to the left of you. GOP primaries my entire life, for the most part, is how do I triangulate to win the general? It just doesn't work. It's just about triangulation. I am totally 100% on board, unequivocally, with a vicious, nasty primary GOP primary, if and only if the viciousness and the nastiness is directed around policy. I'm to the right of you, and here's how I'm going to get it done. Mm-hmm. No, I'm more to the right of you, and here's how I'm going to get it done. Mm-hmm. Hey, this leaked audio said you're not as far right as you think that, or as you're portraying, and you don't have a vision of how you're going to accomplish that. That's the fight that we're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Not the, hey, look at this. I did 5,000 gymnastic moves and a wink and a nod. And, you know, it's not really you're Bill Clinton. That's not a fight. That's just banal stupidity. And that's, quite frankly, a lot of what we're seeing right now online in the great DeSantis, Team Trump wars, at least coming from one side. And fortunately for DeSantis, he's got Jedi Masters over there, like Christina Pusha, who is just daily, really minute by minute, just is more like the Matrix, actually, just destroying these false narratives that are being thrown against the wall and seeing what sticks. The reality is, and I want to get your take on this too, Steve, kind of from a big picture standpoint, it seems as if Donald Trump's plan for the last 5-6 months since the midterms was to scare Ron DeSantis into not running, or out of running, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think he had a plan B? Because if from right now, this initial first week or so since he's announced, I don't really see what that plan B is.
I honestly don't know. I don't. This isn't, you know, here's the truth of the entire Trump era. Because it's not my analysis. It's an obvious truth. Like, Newton didn't analyze gravity. It existed before him. It was self-evident truth. Donald Trump's primary driver, not his only one, but his primary driver is the ego. Like Kayleigh McEnany found out last night, it's about him. It is about him. It's always been about him. It's always going to be about him. I mean, I stood 10 feet from him when he said he'd never asked God for forgiveness because he'd never done anything wrong. So, I mean, if you're not going to humble yourself before the only all-powerful being in the universe, you're certainly not going to humble yourself before the plebs. That being said, there have been plenty of times where the interest of his ego aligned with our interest. He wants a claim. We have the votes to give it to him. We gave it to him. And on several instances, he gave us what we wanted, like overturning Roe. I will always be thankful for those moments. But ultimately, there is a worldview difference here. And I think we've glommed over that for a long time because it's probably not good for business to bring it up. And frankly, he did a lot of good things for us, so there was no point in bringing it up. Overall, the transactional nature of this relationship worked out pretty well for us. No one can argue right now that life was not better pre-COVID under Trump, markedly, on every front, than it is right now. No one could argue otherwise. Unless you're actively trying to destroy the country. Those would be the only people who would. What I find fascinating, though, is that to your question, Aaron, he won't run on that.
No.
Everything is based on volatility and spite and anger. This is why I've made the King Saul reference. This is Saul, King Saul behavior. How dare you even flirt with this young generation, David? I mean, This is not erratic. And this is personal. And so I don't really know the answer. Everything is personal. They stole the election from me, and I agree that they did. And I've said that on this show before, I'm fine using his spite where that's concerned to my advantage. Provided it's being channeled in a direction that makes him want to destroy the people that are trying to destroy me. Instead, what you see him doing is the opposite. That's what Raheem Kassam did here. This goes beyond competition within a campaign. This is he concocted his own Russian collusion narrative, essentially.
For the last 5 or 6 months, the foundation of this campaign has been defensive, actually. When that shouldn't be the case. You've got 4 years of a record. You could have preemptively gone, your middle name is I overturned Roe v. Wade. Your middle name is peace in the Middle East.
Yeah.
Your middle name is foreign policy. You need somebody who accomplished what I did. Your middle name should be
middle
all
class
of these,
wage growth.
Middle class wage growth. Your middle name is all of these things. Instead, it's how dare you? Just foundationally defensive.
And if we're going to do that, then this has the potential to poison the well beyond his expiration date, and that's concerning. All right, back here on Blaze TV, live and on demand. Really not that much in demand, though. We are the Steve Dace Show. This is Hour 2. Let us know what you think about what we think via the SteveDace.com inbox, which you can access by emailing us, steve@stevedace.com. DEACE. Like us on Facebook, MeWe, and Gab. You can follow me at Steve Dace Show on Twitter, Getter, Instagram and TikTok. You can also find me on Truth Social at Real Steve Dace there, at Real Steve Dace there. And we would like to find your 5-star review of our show on the podcast platform of your choice. And we have found thousands of them from you already. So please keep those coming. Thank you to each and every one of you. Hit subscribe for us, or if you're on iTunes, now you hit follow. And thanks again for all of you that have done that. Thanks to our friends over at Constitution Wealth Management. They have helped already move millions of dollars from people in our audience who were previously putting their portfolio at odds with their principles. And they have shown them you don't have to do that anymore. Help align your values with your money. Put your prosperity, put it to use in the culture war. It's a mighty tool. As Target and its stock value is finding out right now, as Budweiser and its ongoing stock depletion is finding out right now, as Disney has found out and is finding out right now, it is a powerful tool when we put it to work for us. If you want to do that, if you no longer want to have to hold your nose, look the other way when your statement comes in because you recognize, yeah, we're doing well, but look at some of the stuff we're invested in. You don't have to have a clean conscience versus the right ROI any longer. This is what our friends at Constitution Wealth do. This is what they can help you with. Book an appointment today to get your retirement investments aligned with your values and help them build the parallel economy, the two of you working together right now at constitutionwealth.com/Steve. That's constitutionwealth.com/Steve. We welcome in Blaze TV contributor Jill Savage filling in for this segment for Todd for Buy, Sell, or Hold. Jill, have you done this before?
I did, but Todd was there. It was the Wednesday before Thanksgiving.
There you go.
There was not going to be a day's group. There wasn't going to be an overtime.
That's right.
And
that's
so
right now.
We all had a big laugh. And, you know, there's a lot of college football talk then, too. So it was a really fun one, you know,
right,
that we could go back and have our college football fix.
So we are taking the training wheels off, Jill. All right. We are letting you fill some very big vinegar-soaked shoes, known as where Todd usually sits, albeit virtually via the Skype. But are you ready to go?
I am, and I have one major thing going for me.
What's
Lindsey
that?
Graham doesn't want to hold me.
That's right. So I don't know what to say. You know, I have, and frankly, I don't want to shame your dad. So I have nothing to corner you with other than out of honor. Please don't ever hold unless the suggestion is terrible. You ready to go?
Okay.
All right, here we go.
We will begin with Data Masks, who says, if Republicans caving to the left were a quote from a TV show, it would be, quote, all of this has happened before. All of this will happen again. Battlestar Galactica, buy, sell, or hold.
Well, first of all, you're citing what I think is one of the greatest television shows of all time. So that, you know, you hit me in the feels. All right. But I think that also applies here as well. So I will buy.
Absolute buy. I woke up this morning and I saw Thomas Massey on our friend Glenn Beck's on his show this morning. And I will say I came into this show in a mood, Steve. And if I was going to go on any other show on Blaze TV, I would have been worried about that. But I was going on the Steve Day show where all of this will be welcomed, all of this rage, right? And I heard Thomas Massey say, oh, you know, yeah, the debt ceiling bill. Oh, gosh. It was okay. And they put my provision in this. So I can't say that it's a bad bill. Actual quote from Thomas Massey earlier today, who's usually on our side. And I couldn't help but think, gosh, Thomas Massey is saying, you know, this is a dog turd. But because some of my DNA is in this dog turd, I love it. I can't get over that. They've done it before. They will do it again. Absolute buy.
Some of my DNA is in this dog turd, so I love it. There you go, uncontexted Steve Dace show. There's your next fodder. Rooster with a violent past says, of all the greatest sports records of the modern era, DiMaggio's 56-game hitting streak will be the last to fall if it ever does.
I think I can buy this. When you look at the specialization in pitching, now, when you look at guys take days off, so even playing 56 games in a row in general, isn't a given. You look at other sports, and that's the beauty of Major League Baseball. is the pursuit of individual excellence is at least on par with team success. I mean, almost no one remembers who won the rebounding title in 1984 in the NBA. All right, but lots of people that are sports fans remember who won the home run title in 1984, or who had the who won the batting crown, okay, as well as who won the World Series. So there is a unique aspect to baseball along those lines when you talk about the pursuit of individual excellence within the confines of a team sport. And this is certainly one of its most coveted records, and I think one of its most unbreakable. So I could maybe come up with something else that I would concur with, you know, maybe a Michael Phelps. But remember, people never thought anybody would break Mark Spitz's gold medal record, and Michael Phelps did. You know, this one has stood since what? Gosh, it's been what, 70, 80 years that this record has stood. So I'm going to buy. I think it's a good one.
Yeah, I'm going to buy just for the longevity of it, like you say. And I look at the sports across the board, and it's different when you just see the, like you're saying, the individual pursuit of excellence. For whatever reason, baseball is, you know, you can still go through and see Aaron Judge going out and trying to, you know, break home run records and everything. But I just think that DiMaggio's is untouchable still at this point in sports.
To put it in perspective, DiMaggio did that the summer before World War II started.
Good Lord.
All right. So from May 15th to July 16th, he had a hit in every game. At least one in every game. And I think after that, he went on another, like, after the streak got snapped, he went on, like, another pretty big streak after that, too. So, you know, given the longevity of that mark, I think that's a good suggestion. So I'll buy. Yeah.
Also, in an era, I think, where there's a greater propensity to walk guys on hot streaks, yep, just as a rule. So yep, that makes it even harder. Craig Willoughby says, Chip Roy should be the next governor of Texas and could have much more impact on the future of the country than he does currently.
Oh, without question, bye. I've said before, the only position I'm remotely interested and tempted to run for is governor. Because that's where I think real power is wielded, other than the presidency, of course. But I don't, you know, that's kind of unachievable. And governor's not easy to reach either. But would I rather have Chip Roy with executive power or one of 435 in the House, even if he's holding the speaker gavel? Absolutely give me Chip Roy with executive power every single time. Bye.
I am going to buy this as well, because when you look at Ron DeSantis going through and having his presidential run, we're saying, okay, is that actually going to be more meaningful as a president or as the governor of Florida, trying to bring the other governors along with him? And Kim Reynolds there in the state of Iowa, you know, opening up for Ron DeSantis last night. People are throwing her name out there in the VP pool. It would be a huge loss to lose a Kim Reynolds and a Ron DeSantis. So to have a Chip Roy or somebody like that go in the state of Texas and make Texas as red as possible, because we need a red Texas for the rest of the states to follow along with, just that leadership that Chip Roy has, that he has no qualms about stating how he feels. And I absolutely love that about him.
What would happen? I asked this thinking it would be devastating. If instead of what we were just discussing last hour, if Trump were just taking the tack of, why would we, you know, DeSantis running for president is a point of diminishing returns. We have a powerful voice in one of the most important states in the union. Let's keep him there. And put me in the White House and him in Tallahassee there leading America's governors, me draining the swamp. Now, whether you buy that rhetoric or you think that he could fulfill that is a total, this is politics. OK, so that's a separate question. I'm just talking about messaging. I think that would be a devastating message. And I just think about it as someone who did strategy and messaging for a presidential campaign one time in his life. So I have a little experience. It was somewhat successful, not as successful as we wanted it to be, but it wasn't unsuccessful completely either. I would much rather be arguing against how Trump is behaving right now than if he behaved like that. I would much rather be pushing back on obvious distortions and dishonesties and gaslightings and petty grievances. I'd much rather have, I would, like Ron DeSantis was just asked today about Trump trashing Florida and he just laughed. And there's a group of like pastors standing around DeSantis and they're laughing too. Like that's, if I'm on Trump's messaging team, that's a devastating, devastating is getting laughed at. I don't want to get laughed at. I don't want to get mocked. All right. But what if the question were, you know, Governor DeSantis, today the president said you did a fantastic job as Florida governor. You should continue going on and finishing what you promised the people of Florida so that, and he's going to go and continue finishing what he promised the people of America before they stole the last election from him. To me, that's the message I think is much harder to argue around if I'm Ron DeSantis. What do you guys think? Buy, sell, or hold that?
As I'm filling in for Todd, I will say you are asking for logic with Donald Trump, and you are not going to get it, Steve Dace. That is something that we just can't have. We cannot have nice things.
Okay.
Next up, we go to Jim Stocker. Our society is plagued by the spirits of Ahab and Jezebel.
Preach.
With the Ahab spirit being weak, passive, and tolerant of evil, and the Jezebel spirit being domineering, controlling, dishonest, and power-hungry, they are, in part, the spirit of the age.
Preach. I mean, that's apostolic right there. I mean, that is a sermon that captures the spirit of the age. That tweet is a sinners in the hands of an angry God level of message right there. I mean, that's an Augustine, city of God. I mean, that's a 95 theses. That right there. I mean, that's Jonathan Cahn level stuff in terms of encapsulating the spiritual realms, outpouring of its wrath into the natural world that we see. Jim, that is... That's...
Yeah.
That's
no further
salute.
Questions, Your Honor. Complete buy.
Yep.
Yeah, I love the commentary there that passivity is not the same as neutrality at all. In fact, what is King Ahab? What is the main descriptor of King Ahab? What's the main adjective? Wicked or evil, mm-hmm. King Ahab. Mm-hmm. That's something that needs to be emphasized.
To give people
more.
An example of what Jim's talking about, one of the most notorious stories about Ahab in the Bible is he is king of Israel. And there's a man that owns a plot of land that he wants to acquire, and he tries to convince the man to sell it to him. And the man refuses. And he goes back to his palace, and he is forlorn and depressed. And his wife Jezebel comes to him and asks him what is wrong. And he says, hey, you know, I tried to buy this plot of land, but this guy wouldn't sell it to me, and I really wanted it. And Jezebel says, you're the king. You should just go and kill him and take it. So that's what they do. That is a quantification of what Jim is talking about there. The weakness of male passivity and then the matriarchy. Listen, the patriarchy has its problems. Why? Because every archy that involves humans has problems. But the matriarchy has never been the answer to the patriarchy. It's always come off worse every single time. And that's what ends up happening is Jezebel is the real power behind the scenes and takes a weak man and turns him into a caricature for what evil rulers will be like throughout the rest of the entirety of the Bible.
Next up, At the Fence says DeSantis running for president is a mirror being held up to Trump, which is revealing who he could have been and who he actually still could be if he actually had conservative values. This mirror is what is making MAGA loyalists so angry at DeSantis. It's too truthful.
I wholeheartedly buy this. I think this is why several people in our industry did not want DeSantis to run, because it was going to make their jobs more difficult, too. That if he didn't come out and face plant right away, if they could stay on message and be disciplined, this contrast was going to be hard to avoid. And therefore, you know, gaining all the grifting clicks off of that audience wasn't going to be as easy as it used to be. Joe Biden, Dementia Joe, is a much easier foil. Mike Pence is a much easier foil. And by the way, both those guys deserve to be Trump's foils, and I'm all for that. Okay. This one, not a foil, and it's more of a revealing. And I think that makes a lot of people in my industry's jobs tougher. And that's why they did not like the specter of this primary. So I will buy.
I feel like so many people in my peer group have said exactly this. Why would I vote for Donald Trump when Ron DeSantis will give me the same policies without all of the crap going along with it, with all the me of Donald Trump? So I will completely buy this, because absolutely, it is a mirror being held up saying this could be you if you just had any self-discipline.
Liv Ree says language is used to describe reality. However, the left weaponizes it to create a new reality in their own image. We must speak the truth clearly and do so without adopting their terms. Example, Ukraine-Russia war should henceforth be referred to as the Great Reset War.
That's tremendous. And Live Free, if I knew your name, I'd give you credit. I'm going to start borrowing that. And you are right on the money. Bye. Every word.
Bye, because everybody knows that the language matters. The leftists are the ones that come through and try and take over the narratives, and don't believe what they're trying to push out there. Take it and use it for yourself. And absolutely, this is a great strategy going forward.
Whoever controls the flow of information in any culture, including its language, has control.
Chipper says the more Jill Savage we get on the Steve Dace Show, the better the ratings will be.
Well, that's probably true. I mean, if you looked at the other three of us. Yeah. Now, listen, Jill's an attractive young woman, but clearing our three bars is not exactly scaling heights here. But yes, visually, and this is a visual medium for many of you, it is certainly an enhancement and an improvement for sure.
I appreciate you out there. Thank you.
Tiny Johnny says...
Plus, she's pretty smart, too.
Tiny Johnny says the Republicans in general actually became our enemies back in the first Bush's administration, but the patriotism around the first Iraq war and 9/11 blinded us to their uniparty intentions.
You know, it's funny now, you know, I mean, for my generation, I was growing into politics as Reagan was leaving, and Newt Gingrich was really the first formative figure of my, political maturation. And it was surreal later on, you know, being a part of his presidential campaign, getting to know him. It's also now surreal to see him criticizing people like Chip and others for doing exactly what he did. What Chip and others did to McCarthy in January, what they're doing on this debt deal now, is exactly what Newt Gingrich did to Bob Michael and GOP establishment leadership to become speaker. I mean, he essentially incited a civil war within the Republican Party over George Herbert Walker Bush's decision to violate his Read My Lips, No New Taxes pledge. And he cut a deal with House Democrats, Jim Wright and Senate Democrats, that they were supposedly going to get a certain amount of spending cuts for every tax dollar they raised. Guess what happened? They raised taxes and didn't get spending cuts. Newt Gingrich opposed that, led the fight against that, became the face of the conservative base, and now he's the guy telling Chip Roy and everybody else to just back down and accept everything for party unity. You either die the hero man or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain. But I bring that up because it's in the context of this question that civil war that began there carried over for well into another decade. It was one of the reasons Bob Dole had a hard time turning out the Republican base in 1996. He was seen as a part of that guard. This will be new to Jill and to Aaron. You guys don't remember any of this, but I came of age politically during this era, and I think Tiny is onto something. And I think that 9/11 absolutely, and the existential threat we perceived to the country, absolutely set a lot of those things aside. And then when we got further into the Bush years and moved past 9/11 and past Iraq, and we started getting into fights over immigration and fights over, I have to suspend the free market principles to save the free market and TARP, all of those grievances poured out again and eventually set the stage for what would become known as the Tea Party movement in the Obama era. So I think this is pretty salient analysis. I'm going to buy.
Yeah, can you throw that up there one more time, Aaron?
You bet.
I just want to see that. Like, just looking at it with the Republicans in general actually becoming our enemies back in the first Bush administration, the patriotism around the first Iraq war, 9/11, blinded us to their uniparty intentions, right? This is Shannon Joy's question. I feel like uniparty intentions, and when you finally could figure out what was happening, I do think that that's where it goes back to, is the Bush administration. And you look at the different turning points for conservatives, and we've always had these, you know, rhinos versus conservatives and all that, but it to me at least, it felt more unified, and like there was more of people being on the same page, just trying to get actual things done for the country. And with the Bush administration going through 9/11, it is a huge turning point to which we will never be the same before or after that. And I feel like that's just one of the biggest things that you look at this group and they say, we could wield power, the Patriot Act. We could go through and get things and call it something that the red armies would go out there and like, but we're not doing it to actually help the country. That Bush administration is something that will forever change where we are as a party going forward. And absolute buy in that one.
Next up, we go to Spirit of the Age, who says Trump insulting Kayleigh McEnany will hurt him with his base.
I mean, I think you're already saying that. It's the kind of thing that you take away your influencer's cover to aggressively market for you, and you isolate yourself with stuff like this. I think you've already seen that. So I will buy. We can all, no, I don't think a week from now anybody's going to care. But on his current pace, he'll just be doing something else like that a week from now. I mean, everybody's against me. And the reality is, what Aaron said earlier, I mean, why aren't you running on, I'm Donald Peace in the Middle East, Trump, you know? But again, like Todd would say, if you were here, I'm asking for logic. And I guess that's too big of an ask for the times in which we live.
Trump hires all of the best people until you live long enough for them not to be the best people. And they're total disloyal, you know, milquetoast, whatever he wants to throw out this week. No, who would want to work in the next Trump administration? Should he win somehow, some way, should they not steal it from him again, which would be hard enough, who would actually want to go work in the Trump administration if this is how he deals with one of the best hires that he made?
Next up, we have Crispy. Uganda is more conservative than Texas.
Oh my God.
That's an easy buy. Easy buy. Gosh. I looked this up the other day. Vast majority of the country is some form of Christian. I don't think you can say that about Texas.
Oh, gosh. I mean, there's not many places right now that are not more conservative than Texas or most U.S. states, frankly. So I guess I'll buy. Although I will admit, I forgot to, you know, get the latest download on Ugandan social theory again this morning when I woke up. So I can't state that for a fact. This is more me fading Texas than it is highlighting Uganda.
I feel like
Uganda forever. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Jill.
I was going to say, I feel like the Venn diagram of Ayed Mubarak and Ugandan politics squarely sits right in the middle. It's just the Steve Dace Show audience, and I, for one, could not be more happy about that. So bye.
We had a lot of submissions like that, actually.
I bet we did. Yeah. I got a lot of blessed Ayed Mubarak the last 48 hours. Got a lot. Yeah.
Bacon says the only opposition to the Rainbow Ramadan by MLB players will be written statements.
As opposed to sitting out?
Yeah. I mean, I'm honestly the three, so it's been Clayton Kershaw, kind of. He said he disagreed with it. There's a player for the Nationals and another pitcher for the Dodgers who put out pretty good statements praying for them, you know, because they're going to take slings and arrows, and I just cannot stand to see another super strong, wealthy young man or man just completely capitulate and self-flagellate in front of the nation. But, yeah.
I am going to sell. I'm reminded of what the Lord reminded Elijah of. There are always 7,000 men in Israel who have not taken the knee to Baal yet. His word does not return void. So I'm going to sell, not off any level of faith or trust I have in the current state of American masculinity, but in the Lord.
I unfortunately am going to buy, because we see what is happening, you know, just the pushback already that Aaron played in his montage today. ESPN now going after Sam Ponder in a passive aggressive kind of way, where they have the trans flag up. Clay Travis just tweeted this out today. ESPN is going to have, like, you know, I don't know if it's like a trans visibility day or whatnot, but this is the way of the world. And if you go against it right now, you will be made to care.
Next up, Steve Dace Burner. The starting point for Ohio State to overcome its soft mentality in the trenches on the football field and to overcome Michigan is for them to force Ryan Day into an intervention to stop with the continuous obsessive hair transplants for his beard.
I think it might be a tad more complicated than that. Ryan Day is also 45-6. Man, 45-6. Okay, so, I mean, Ohio State was one kick at midnight away from winning the national championship. Had they beaten Georgia, they would have turned around and beaten TCU. I don't think I wasn't sweating that one out. Man, whew, that was a close call. But, no, 45-6. Now, if they get out manhooded again this year, and that's three in a row, then I think that becomes a little harder to defend. I think it was Joel Klatt or somebody said this, that Michigan is uniquely, that Ohio State is constructed to win national championships. Michigan is constructed to beat Ohio State. And I think that's a fairly good observation based on what we've seen the last couple of years.
Sell. If Ryan Day ever goes on the open market, 99% of teams
are
buying for his services.
And pro teams would be buying for his services. Absolutely.
I absolutely would be taking that over. So I have to sell.
Emily says Christians should take the month of June off from spending any money besides what is absolutely necessary. Food, gas, mortgage, etc. Hashtag let's find out if they actually don't care about our money.
I think we have to ask ourselves, is even what she's suggesting possible? You know, is there a place that you know you can go to buy gas that doesn't give to these causes? Do you have a place that you can go shop at that you know doesn't give anything to these causes? I'm not sure how achievable that is. To me, I also think spreading yourself that thin is hard to hold, to put off or to pull off and maintain consistently. To me, the strategy of aiming for a thermal exhaust port, making an example out of somebody, out of a few somebodies, making an example out of Budweiser, making an example out of Target, places where you uniquely have Disney, where you uniquely have influence, and racking up those wins, I just think is more achievable. Because this rainbow tumor in the culture is so systemic, I don't think it's possible to completely divorce yourself from it on any level. I mean, you guys are watching us right now on YouTube. You're listening to us on iTunes. Those companies are advocates, expositors, evangelists, proselytizers for the rainbow jihad. I don't think it's possible to completely be divorced from it. I just don't.
I look at it and say being fiscally responsible in D.C., great. Being fiscally responsible at home, even better. But, you know, you don't have to take out every single company. You don't have to stop spending your money entirely. You can still spend money. You know, there are good companies out there that are, you know, on our side, advancing our causes. You shouldn't stop spending your money with them. But in a general context, just take out a few of the big corporations and put the fear in them that the next company, this could happen to you. So you better not go off and you know, follow the trans flag down the rabbit hole. That's what you need to do, is just scare the big ones enough that the little ones don't follow in line.
One more?
Yes. Actually, let's do like two or three more rapid fire. Taco Slayer says, with an expanded college football playoff, we'll see more 4- and 5-star recruits willing to go to the Iowas and Arkansas of football. I'm going to sell on this.
I'm going to sell. But I think NIL may balance that out to some degree.
I'm going to sell as well. You still want to go to the big top programs.
Blake Johnson says, David French thinks Caitlyn Jenner is kind of hot.
Where Todd is gone this week? No.
I'll buy that. Absolutely.
I'll buy that for Todd.
Who's the alpha male? Who's the alpha male in that top bottom relationship, David?
Oh, that's all we got time for.
Is that a good place to end it right there?
Yeah.
Pontificating. Who's the alpha? Who wears the pants in the David French Bruce Jenner relationship? Jill, always good to see you. Thank you for being with us. See you Friday.
You too. See you guys.
All right. We'll come back. The Prophet of Woe and Lamentation will join next. If you're struggling with chronic pain in the body, now this is different from a clinical pain. That is something that requires professional medical attention. For example, my wife had bone spurs in her knee, partially torn meniscus, had to have that. That's a clinical issue, had to have that clinically repaired. and those bone spurs removed. But she has a chronic issue too, and that's too much inflammation in her joints and in places like her knee. And that's why we've started her on Relief Factor. If you are struggling with too much inflammation in the body, then Relief Factor is the drug-free formula created by physicians who can prescribe drugs, but its intention is to do exactly that. And I can't give a better case for its success than about 70% of the people who try the 3-week quick start end up sticking around and using the product long term because of the results they see in 3 weeks or less. Can't do better than that, right? And if you were going to lie, you wouldn't pick like 70%. You'd pick like 95% or something, right? So 70% is a good number that shows, hey, this thing can really work. May not work for everybody. You might be in the 30%, but why not for $20? Try it and find out. What do you have to lose? If you have been struggling with chronic pain, just $20 to see if you don't see a difference in your level of chronic pain in 3 weeks or less with our friends at Relief Factor. Take advantage of this offer when you go to relieffactor.com. That's relieffactor.com. You can also call them at 800-4-RELIEF, the number 4, 800-4-RELIEF. Let's bring in the weekly prophet of woe and lamentation. Good to see you again, my friend, Daniel Horowitz. Thank you for being with us again this week. How are you?
We are doing all right, Steve. Couldn't be better. We get to do conservative politics. I get to be on TV. I get to hear myself talk. Sucks to be everyone else, but we're having a good time.
Very nice. So we were discussing this story that Raheem Kassam over at Steve Bannon's outfit. Now, I don't know those people at all. You know them a little bit, right? And I think you were on the War Room a few times when we brought Rise of the Fourth Reich out, correct? You've been on there a few times.
Yep.
Okay. So I don't know that those people at all. Natalie Winters at National Pulse did some pieces I really liked. We had her on the show. I have a great deal of gratitude and respect for what Bannon has done with his work on the jab. If there's anybody with a large platform in media other than you and us that has done more on this issue and revealed more on this issue than us, it's probably him. And the partnership that he forged with Naomi Wolf, I think that has been a value to the Republic, to humanity, basically. And so I'm very thankful for that, which is why I was extremely disappointed to see what his Padawan over there, Raheem, tried to pull over the weekend with this alleged hidden audio of the of DeSantis's campaign people. And when I went on Twitter to gauge the reaction, I was thinking, wow, this is going to be trending. No one was talking about it outside of a few of their people. And when I listened to the audio later, I found out why, because the audio doesn't reinforce anything that Raheem put in the actual article associated with it. And so there were probably a lot of people within their own influencer network that were just like, yeah, we can't defend that hatchet job. And that's good. That's good that they refuse to give to elevate that story all the more. But here's the question. When, if ever, do we have a responsibility as an industry and a movement to say, hey, that's outside the rules of engagement. Campaigns are going to have their talking points, like Trump's got the talking point right now that Florida was had the third most deaths, which if you look at the whole number is basically true, but you can't do that when per capita, you know, Florida has 21 million people and Iowa has 3.5. All right. So it's a spin. It's not factually accurate. That's kind of campaign rhetoric, though. I'm not, you know, I don't think that's our position as a movement or industry. Let the campaigns fight that one out. But this level of gaslighting of our own people, really an attempt to mass deceive our own people, to me, I think that does raise a moment where we have to say more than I'm just not going to give air to that, but say, no, we're not doing that. That's the kind of stuff that will divide us for years into the future. This is Trump's last lap around the track. We're not crapping where we live. You're up by 30 points anyway. Act like it. Right. So that we're not doing that. But what are your thoughts?
No, Steve, I think I disagree with you. I mean, this might have been the latest Kassam missile, but they've been doing this the entire time. There's nothing really new about this. The entire campaign has been lying and gaslighting, bearing false witness. I mean, they conflate the fair tax, which was a staple of Republican politics. Donald Trump himself voiced support for it many times with raising taxes without mentioning that, you know, you're voting to eliminate the entire IRS. So they hit DeSantis with that. They hit him with opposing Trump's omnibus bill that banned the construction of concrete barriers, but then couch it as you're voting against the border wall. I mean, they've been doing this the entire time, but this is what Trump is. And this is, I know what you were concerned about, gosh, 8 years ago, and really it largely bore fruit. unfortunately. And that is that Trump is much like the COVID shots. You have the negative efficacy. You have the IgG4 neutralizing or tolerating rather than neutralizing antibodies, where you tolerate crap that we would never tolerate from anyone else, whether it's values, antics, lies, policies. You know, amnesty is good if it's coming from Trump. Jailbreak is good if it's coming from Trump. The omnibus and debt ceiling bills are good if it's coming from Trump. I mean, this is the problem. See, I often say if we were stuck with, let's say, someone like Mike Pence or Nikki Haley, if they were starting with some of this stuff, or, you know, starting with Disney's great, or, you know, Cuomo really did a good job, you would have a unified right. People like those in the orbit of War Room unifying against that and charting their own path. The problem here is it's one big, what is it, the Council of Youngsters to Rehoboam with their leader. That's what they are. They won't tell the man, hey, buddy, get on message, run to the right, blow up the debt ceiling bill. You know, you haven't heard Trump mention a word about that, which is jarring. I mean, that's the biggest issue right now. He hasn't said anything. You know why? Because nobody is going to pressure him to do that. Just like no one's going to pressure him to change on COVID fascism or any issue. And this is the moral hazard heading forward, that just like you and I are mission oriented towards our outcomes, and within reason, we'll do anything to achieve it. Heck, if you're going to lie, at least lie for your outcome. But their outcome is the man himself, which is really the grift around him that, you know, their personal career benefits from it, and they just can't let go.
I was listening to your podcast this morning, getting ready to come into the office, and you were discussing what's at stake in this primary, and I thought you had an interesting angle. Essentially, you were arguing agency is at stake. Do we have any kind of voice in the process whatsoever? And one of the reasons that I was adamant in 2016 about getting behind a conservative that I thought had the campaign to go the distance early on to help try to unite our leaders behind that person, is because I had seen the same thing. We had tried to gain agency via the Tea Party movement. A lot of them got into Washington. Within one election, they were already funding the biggest budgets in the history of Washington, D.C. You just get co-opted. And maybe I have several issues with Reagan's second term. I think his first term is the best term from a president we've had since Coolidge. But I'm forever grateful. Like, I'm not in favor of the amnesty deal he cut. I'm not in favor of the vaccine manufacturer liability deal he cut, things of that nature. But what he did do, though, by serving two terms, is for the next generation, people like you and I and our elders in our movement had agency nationally. They had a platform, a voice to speak nationally into the political arena. And it really that lasted, you know, for almost 20 years after Reagan left the national stage. And we've watched that agency erode and fade now in the last decade or so. And so a lot of times we feel we don't have any representation. You are making the argument that you think that is at stake in this primary. Can you explain what you mean by that?
I think having someone like DeSantis as party leader is a bigger deal than having him as president. As you well know, I am not so bullish on our prospects of fixing the country. Sadly, I agree with you. Like, I'm starting to root for Iran in some of these soccer matches. Like, I mean, we say in the army motto is "This will defend." I mean, what are we defending? Mm-hmm. You know, when Rainbow Ramadan comes down tomorrow. I don't know how much you can fix this, but what I do know is this: whatever we will try to do, whether it's this in Congress, this in the primaries, federal primaries, local primaries, state legislatures, local elections, we cannot do that until we have a change at the top, someone who's going to give us tailwinds, not headwinds. And Exhibit A is what we're going through right now, Steve, on the House floor. Even I'm impressed at the degree of political adultery that is taking place when we were winning on the polls and the polling data on the debt. You have a comatose president who's half alive. You have very winning issues. You have the economy and inflation horrible. You had a united House, and they pissed it away in a way that it wasn't just, oh, you know, this is the best they can get. They did it before they even had to, and they gave them twice as much debt increase as the Democrats even asked for. Okay, and I look back and I say, over 15 years, because I've covered the genesis of every budget fight since Obama's presidency began, and we have not improved one iota. Since Trump came into power, the party has not changed one iota. The problem we had pre-Trump is the same thing problem we have post-Trump, in that you had conservatives coexisting with the Republican Party with this fake arrangement where we would use them to just gain agency in politics as an end to itself, and they would use our vote to continue screwing us. And we would never force a brinkmanship where either, you know, kind of like when someone comes in and they see their wife is in bed with someone else, it's like, you know, you can't unsee that. Something's going to change. But yet we keep seeing them, you know, engage in sodomy with the Democrats and nothing happens. Nothing ever happens. We continue this muddled ground where we don't force a cathartic moment where either we leave the party or they're forced to leave the party and we could chart a new direction. Trump was supposed to be that person, but the problem is Trump was the perfect coexistence because Trump did not occupy the policy space. He often sided with the establishment. So he created an agency for our people to kind of meme, to defend his personality as an end to itself, to do all sorts of fun things while the establishment was able to continue doing what they always do, often with his help, with his endorsements. Like he did to us with endorsing Kevin McCarthy and now standing down with this fight, and he gave them tailwinds. We need someone who is going to own that space of seriousness, of policy, that forces a moment with McCarthy, with Cornyn, with Thune, with McConnell, all these Republican governors. This is what it's like to be a Republican, and if they still resist, it will force some sort of inflection moment. That, to me, is the greatest asset of having a good presidential candidate, much more so than even fixing the federal government.
So the race between these two guys has formally gone on for about a week now, although it already kind of feels like it's been dog years on several fronts. Okay. Give me a critique. There has to at least be something. That if you were, you know, if Ron called you up and said, hey, my old friend, you know, pick the one thing I should have done differently, because I know you have no problem providing a critique. There has to be something. What would it be?
I would say he needs more long form, two things, long form town halls and press conferences where you just field questions on any issue going on and you just speak. He is much better with that than he is with a typical stump speech, because I think what people have seen from him, he really is not a typical politician, and that's not so much his thing. He gains energy off of meandering on issues and speaking his mind. He appears more likable, folksy, knowledgeable. So I would spend much more time on that than the formal speech I know you attended in Iowa. But all in all, I think he had a pretty good week. I think a lot of people were concerned that this was a one-sided fight for many months where the Trump side was hitting and they weren't hitting back, but it looks like they're hitting back pretty strong. I think the question remains, and it really was the question at the beginning, and this will persist, does the GOP voting base reflect the GOP chattering class? And what I mean is the dichotomy between substance, results, mm-hmm. and a clown show is pretty obvious from this first week. I mean, you can't miss it. But are we going to see the same sort of dynamic where we see in every primary where you get that 30% that gets it and they vote against that incumbent in the primary? And I consider Trump an incumbent for all intents and purposes. But the 70% go along with the status quo, or will he have enough energy, but also enough organization to penetrate the minds of people that he is the one going forward to carry the mantle? In other words, I don't think he needs to attack Trump more, because most voters don't want to hear that they made a mistake with him, which I don't think was a mistake. You didn't have much of an option. But I think he needs to lean in on as many of these opportunities as he has to fight with the left, fight with the rhinos, even the Mexican president. I thought he should. He responded. I thought he should have made more hay about counterattacking the Mexican president when he attacked him for his immigration law in Florida. That's what makes Trump so popular. People don't view Trump in his own right. They view him based on the ricochet reaction from his enemies. And he needs to hijack that and become the new tour de force, you know, because what I've learned is just a list of he did this wrong, he did this wrong, I'm going to do this. It just doesn't work. It gets 30%. It doesn't win a primary.
Good stuff, my friend. Always good to see you. Thank you.
Take care.
You bet. Aaron, you have any reaction to what you just heard from Daniel? We'll talk more about this in the overtime, specifically about last night's event here in Iowa. But what do you think?
Yeah. We'll talk about this more in just a few moments. I would generally agree with those specifics. But there is going to be a moment sometime, I don't know when or where one of these two guys has the opportunity to glom onto one singular issue that will hopefully, you know, if you're a DeSantis fan or a Trump fan, catapult them. Now, Donald Trump, as we talked about earlier, has the luxury of being the de facto incumbent. He does have that luxury. Right now, he's not seizing that. So he could pick any day that he wants to glom onto an issue because of the pulpit that he already has and the record that he already has on some things that we like. But he's not doing that. So really, all this comes down to, I like what Daniel just said about making more hay with the Mexican president. Basically, sit down, shut up, get your country under control. Something like that, I think, would really resonate in this primary. And I think that there's going to be an opportunity for a moment like that in the very near future.
All right, we will discuss that more here in the overtime. For Blaze TV subscribers at blazetv.com/dace. For the rest of you, we will be back reunited with Todd tomorrow, noon to 2 Eastern, right after Glenn Beck, right here on Blaze TV. Until then, John 3:17.